welcome to the Retro Raw Rundown. This is covering Raw's episode number 192, where we are in the dying days of the one-hour format. It is going to tours very soon, but this is the first episode from 1997, where we are covering the January 6th, 1997 episode of Monday Night Raw. I'm Kenny McIntosh, as always, joined by Sandra to get back in the DeLorean. The first Raw 1997, Sandra.
It is the first Raw of 1997. I didn't realize how soon the two-hour Raws were coming. I'm going to cherish these moments of one-hour Raws. I'm pretty excited that they're not 2 hours yet. But yeah, first Raw of 1997. It seems very weird. We're in 2017 now, 1997. I'm going to have to start changing the tags on Patreon when I upload my notes, because I always tag 1996. Now I have to remember to do 1997, which I'm almost just saying out loud so that I remember when I upload my notes for this episode.
Yeah, it's the thing that's interesting is this is the beginning of big changes in the WWF, so it'll be interesting to see as we go. But before we begin, because I do forget to plug it sometimes, we do have a Patreon page, ladies and gentlemen, at patreon.com/insidetheropes, where you can get extra content if you want to support us by giving a little bit of cash over every month. It funds various things. It funds us paying to keep content up there. It funds mean we can all get to WrestleMania together and do podcasts in person for you guys. It means that we have more time to do some stuff, and it upgrades equipment, lots of different stuff. But just to let you know, we did cover the initial episode of Shotgun Saturday Night this past Wednesday. So you can check that out if you are a $5 or higher pledger. We also, if you just want to pledge $1 a month, you get our WrestleMania 6 review, where Robert and I talk about WrestleMania 6, and that happens, and there's some stuff.
And it doesn't go wrong at all for you.
No, it goes absolutely well for me. I don't say anything out of order.
It is 100% a serious recollection of WrestleMania 6, with no offensive comments from Kenny McIntosh whatsoever.
None. However, if you pledge $3 or more, you get that. Plus, you also get an interview every week, plus all the interviews from our archives we've already got up there. So you will get them. If you pledge $5 or more, you'll get all that. Plus, you'll get Sandra and I doing the retro pay-per-view reviews. You'll get David and I doing Fate Fives. And you also get, there's one further level, which is $50 or more. If you feel the need that you want us to record a podcast of your choosing, we will do that for you. And then if you are a $5 or more subscriber, you get to hear all of those podcasts as well. So David and I reviewed WrestleMania 9. Sandra and I did one on women's wrestling. Robert may be coming back to do one this month, so that's cool. And you can always change. If you want to go up to $50 for 1 month to get us to do a podcast that you want us to do, that's fine. And then you can go right back down to 3 or 5, whatever you want. Just to let some people know, there were a couple of people who, payments maybe didn't go through for Patreon for this month. So we just encourage you to check your emails, because one person I knew didn't know that had happened, and he was frantically trying to sort it. So just to make you aware of that. But thank you to everyone who's subscribed so far. I'm sure it's just going to keep getting better and bigger and all that sort of stuff. And there is more stuff coming, which we will get into next week. But Sandra, I think I've plugged enough.
I think so. I think it was masterfully done, Kenny.
Thanks, pal. So Monday Night Raw, the first one of 1997. We don't have long now until the Royal Rumble, but we do get a recap of the debut of Shotgun Saturday. Well, before that, tonight we're going to get Bret the Hitman Hart against Vader.
Yeah, I mean, Vader's big head appears on the screen, large and in charge. Very close-up shot of Vader's head for this intro, which, by the way, yay, intro. But, you know, he basically talks about Bret, you know, being the best there is, best there was, best there ever will be. Tonight, Bret Hart, you and the whole world are going to find out exactly what time it is, because it's Vader time. I mean, it was as cut and dry a Vader promo as you can get. But yeah, Bret Hart's going to fight Vader. Shawn Michaels is going to be there ringside, because inexplicably, we think that's a good idea.
Yep, that's Vader is going to face Bret Hart, and Shawn Michaels is going to be at ringside, which is a horrible, horrible idea. Absolutely atrocious.
It goes about as you would expect. But yeah, they do show footage of Shotgun Saturday Night, and this continues throughout the episode. So I really do encourage you, I mean, not just because we want money. But also, I thought the review that we just did of Shotgun Saturday Night was pretty fun. And Shotgun Saturday Night, even if you don't subscribe on Patreon, it's worth checking out that first episode of Shotgun Saturday Night because, oh boy, there's just a lot of craziness that you kind of have to see to believe.
It's a mental episode. And also, I mean, if just to kind of give you an idea, Todd Pettengill and Sonny do the Macarena with a midget.
And not only that, but Todd Pettengill sings alternate lyrics to the Macarena about Mascarita Sagrada.
Can you remember like one specific lyric that made you smile?
I mean, I remember something, he's a midget and his favorite show is Gidget. Because Gidget
that's what you'd expect.
Midget.
That's what you can expect on Shotgun Saturday Night. So we kick off Monday Night Raw, though. We get some clips of Shotgun Saturday Night. They're clearly trying to show you that things are changing in the WWF. They're trying to you know, push the envelope a little bit. But then we get the old school intro, as always, and we kick off with a pretty big match, actually. Two heels going at it. Mankind versus Owen Hart.
Yeah, it's interesting. So right now in the WWF, if you are in a tag team, do you only fight heels and also you are a heel? Is that what goes on? Because I'm trying to think of, I mean, other than the Godwins, is there another babyface tag team?
Furnace and LaFawn.
Oh, Furnace and LaFawn, right. I keep forgetting about them, even though they're supposed to be really important. But, I mean, it's kind of baffling because I feel like we don't really see Owen and Bulldog or any combination of them against baby faces. We just keep seeing them fighting heels, even though this is a singles match with Owen Hart versus Mankind. I mean, Bulldog's not even out there with Owen Hart, so that was kind of interesting. It seems like they're almost trying to make Bulldog a baby face or something.
I'm not saying anything. I'm not. The next kind of 3 or 4 months are very interesting for the Bulldog. That's all I'll say.
Okay.
But you're right. I mean, there's not even dissension. You know, they're not going through dissension. It's more the Bulldog has, you know, he saved Bret Hart. He hates Steve Austin. Owen Hart seems to like Steve Austin, but also wants to be there for Bulldog.
It's complex character-wise. It's not cut and dry, which I love because the storytelling possibilities are really cool. Also, I can't get past this whole idea because Vince keeps mentioning that this will be a tough man matchup, so to speak. Owen Hart versus Mankind. Like, why is Vince McMahon still trying to say tough guy match or like tough man match as a thing? It seems like they're trying to make this into some sort of thing. And maybe that's why it doesn't matter that it's heel versus heel because it's a tough man matchup. Ha ha ha.
I mean, I personally just don't like heel versus heel matches as a rule. It's just not something that thrills me. I like, because I remember at the time when this kind of stuff would happen, like I wasn't hugely into it because I just prefer either baby. I like the idea of a baby face against a baby face because there's more friction and stuff there.
There can be kind of an exhibition quality to it, like a sportsman like contest.
Well, also because like heels,
babyface.
Well, heels are supposed to be dicks as well,
yeah,
in a way. So like if they attack each other, they're just being themselves. You know, they're just being dastardly, which is what they're supposed to do. Whereas, you know, with the babyface, you get some dynamics you don't usually get. But yeah, so we get Mankind versus Owen Hart, and It's pretty decent, you know. I think these two guys work pretty well together. I think the problem was just the fact that it seems sort of nowhere, and they're both heels. It's difficult. I found it a little bit jarring to watch, if I'm honest.
I don't know if I found it jarring so much as just, I mean, I didn't really know why. This seems like a match that would be too big for just a random opener of Raw, but I mean, it was good and I enjoyed it. Both of them cheat at some point in the match, right? Like Owen Hart hits Mankind with the belt at one point, right in view of Baby Mike Chioda, and there's no DQ for some reason, which I don't really understand. Like, this was never called a no DQ match, right? Like, it was never meant to be some sort of street fight or anything, but they do plenty of brawling on the outside. I mean, like, Mankind gets hit onto the guardrail at one point. At one point, Mankind hits Owen with a water tub. And that's actually met with ECW chants, which I found really interesting. But I don't know. Like, I thought it was good. It was enjoyable. I didn't know why there was no DQ when, you know, in previous days, we've seen refs disqualify someone because someone else just got up on the apron and did nothing.
Referees.
Yeah.
I mean, there should be so much more sort of like consistency across the board. But there never is. It's wrestling.
Yeah.
I guess we just need to accept it. But it's a pretty decent match. And then Owen, what was interesting is that Owen Hart ends up getting pinned. And it felt kind of out of nowhere, which was, I mean, it was decent, I guess, you know, because you weren't expecting it. But to see him just kind of, because he obviously goes for the tackle and then Mankind gets out of the way, so he goes shoulder first out of the post and then there's a pile driver. But, you know, Mankind's just coming off this big program with The Undertaker, so it's kind of, where's he going? Owen Hart feels like he's not really involved in anything right now, apart from the sort of brewing weirdness of him not fully supporting the Bulldog in his feud with Steve Austin. It was a bit odd, all in.
It was a bit odd. I mean, it was good, but
yeah,
I'm not super sure what it accomplished other than, I mean, it gave them both a platform to have a good match and it was enjoyable. I like the fact that Mankind wins with a pile driver, but like he sort of has to crawl over onto Owen to cover him still because they're trying to sell the fact that this has been such a tough contest and, you know, it's been a hard fought battle or whatever. So it doesn't look like, you know, Mankind also looks like he's taken damage. And I like that both of them have taken damage.
Then we follow up with, we see backstage that Shawn Michaels is here with not just Jose Lothario, but Pete Lothario, Jose's son.
Jose's son Pete there in a cowboy hat. In my Patreon notes, I actually took a picture of the screen at one point when Pete like points at the camera during his promo. Because just the three of them. What a crew.
What a crew. What an absolute crew of lads. But yeah, I mean, basically Shawn Michaels has to be forced to pretend that he likes Jose for a little while. So that's, you know, painful for him.
He has to try and be human, which is very difficult for Shawn Michaels. I mean, they ask Jose how he's doing and he's, you know, thanks everybody and says he's determined to stay in the corner of Shawn Michaels at the Royal Rumble, which I don't understand why, but whatever. Pete here is just, oh, he's awful, isn't he? Like,
he's terrible. The whole reason behind the Jose thing at the Rumble is that part of the thought process was that Jose Lothario was a huge Texas wrestling legend. Like, he was really big in the area. So the idea that, you know, he would get to come back to ringside and be there for Shawn Michaels in the main event would be a good story. You know, I guess it's kind of like the old guard getting to come out one more time with Shawn. But the problem going back to day one, we've said it since the beginning of Retro Raw, is that the partnership of Jose and Shawn isn't very believable.
No, because Shawn Michaels doesn't look like he actually cares about Jose Lothario. I mean, he can say that he cares, but the sunglasses Shawn Michaels here, just, he doesn't really care about humanity. I think my favorite thing is that Pete says he's been assisting his father in every way possible. And then he says the words, "If I need to be any assistance at him at Royal Rumble, I will," and points to the camera emphatically.
Pete is like a, you know, they missed the boat on Pete Lothario because he could have been a star, but they just didn't take any heed of him. I mean, look at him. Look at the pizzazz that he showed in this first appearance.
Oh, so much pizzazz. At this point, what I put in my notes, not having seen the end of the show, why do I now want to see Pete get powerbombed by Psycho Sid? Because that was all I wanted in that moment.
We'll see if you get it later on.
Will my wish come true?
The Honky Tonk Man is on commentary again because he's actually looking, I don't know if you've noticed this, ladies and gentlemen, but the Honky Tonk Man is looking for a new protege right now. He is, he's seen if anyone can shake, rattle, and roll, if they can, you know, live up to his needs and his desires. And he's out to watch this tag team match between Doug Furness and Phil LaFon going up against Razor and Diesel.
Yeah, it's true. We did get some footage of Crush versus Ahmed Johnson from Shotgun Saturday Night before this.
Wait, yeah, they're basically trying to really get you to watch Shotgun Saturday Night, although they don't tell you at any point where you can watch it.
That's true. That's a good point.
I feel like that's the one thing they're really missing here is, well, how do I watch it?
They probably should tell you how to watch Shotgun Saturday Night so that you can see Sister Angelica and Mother Smucker.
Okay. Those names.
I love Sister Angelica and Mother Smucker.
So we have this tag team match, and it's okay, but the thing with Shotgun Saturday Night that I said when we did that show was that like wrestling that's not great is fine when the characters are really good
and when the story is like, fun and
you've got Razor and Diesel who are Razor and Diesel. And then you have Furnace and LaFon, who are like they're a really good tag team, but they're very, very bland. You know, they're kind of I like them, but they just it's not really clicking yet. You know, but they beat the piss out of Razor and Diesel, which is fun.
Yeah, they do. I mean, there's just not that much to latch onto character wise with Furnace and LaFon at this point because, I mean, yeah, they are really good wrestlers. I would love to see Furnace and LaFon versus Owen and Bulldog. Would love to see that. But them versus Razor and Diesel, I mean, I feel kind of bad for Razor and Diesel because, like, they're not great, but they're also not that shit either. And I think everyone just thought they were shit because they weren't, like, actual Razor and Diesel. So I've started to feel kind of bad for them and the fact that no one's going to ever take them seriously doing this. And so, I mean, poor Rick Bonner.
The thing is, like, you know, Razor and Diesel were two huge, huge names, beloved in WWF. Now they're in WCW, literally changing the industry, you know. I mean, you could sit and argue whether that's better or worse, but, you know, they were changing the industry in the NWO. So, like, the pressure that's on Rick Bogner and Glenn Jacobs to even come close to that is just, like, nobody could have done it. You know, it's like when Lex Luger came in 1993... and did the Made in the USA stuff and had the Lex Express. Like, people shit on Lex Luger. Lex Luger was fine. Like, he wasn't terrible. But you were just coming off Hulk Hogan. You can't replace it with another knockoff Mr. America kind of guy. This doesn't work, you know? And I feel like these guys are put in a no-win situation, and it's time to go away, I think. Like, for me, like, I'm just like, but I do feel bad for them. You know, luckily Glenn Jacobs would get another chance. Rick Bogner would not.
Yeah. What I think is really interesting here during this match, too, though, is the Honky Tonk Man, right? Like, out here trying to find someone. He says he's going to, you know, take a good look at who he's going to, like, maybe clone. He talks about maybe wanting to clone someone to be the next Honky Tonk Man. And, you know, Vince goes through the list of things that the Honky Tonk Man wants from someone who can sing, who can shake, rattle, and roll. And Honky Tonk Man's like, and play the guitar. That's very important. Again, I don't know why he's not looking at Jesse James, but whatever. But what I find really odd about the Honky Tonk Man and his recruiting strategy here is Honky Tonk Man has already been ringside for a Razor Ramon match because it was Razor Ramon versus Bret Hart, right? The first time we saw him. And he basically shit on Razor Ramon and Bret Hart the entire time. So why in the world is Honky Tonk Man out here for Razor Ramon and Diesel versus Furnace and LaFon? I mean, they make mention at some point, you know, oh, why is the Honky Tonk Man out here during a tag team match when, you know, he's looking for a single star and he makes it very clear he's looking for an individual. And Lawler's like, well, you don't mind splitting up a tag team. And Honky Tonk Man's like, no, I don't mind splitting up a tag team. Why not if I get what I want? Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense that he's out here for a tag match, but you can justify it the way they did. But he's already seen Razor Ramon in action, and it wasn't what he was looking for. Does he really think that Doug Furnace or Phil LaFon are going to shake, rattle, and or roll?
I mean, it's doubtful, isn't it?
It really is. I feel like there are other people that he could be scouting that would maybe fit the bill a little bit more. I don't think he's going to find what he's looking for here on Monday Night Raw if he keeps, you know, watching these matches that they just don't feature people that he's looking for. I question his strategy, Kenny.
I think you're right to question his strategy, Sandra, especially given the fact that he searches for quite a while. But in the end, luckily, common sense would prevail here, and Furnace and LaFawn would get the victory over Razor and Diesel. You know, Razor and Diesel have already had their tag title shot, and they fucked it.
Yep, they sure did.
In your house, it's time was supposed to be Vader, but ended up being said, thank God. but then we get more footage from Shotgun Saturday Night of Marlena flashing the Sultan.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Why do Furnace and LaFawn have yin-yangs on their pants?
I have no idea, but I will try for next week to get the answer.
Okay. It just, I don't know.
Don't know how I'm going to get it, but I'm going to try.
Go to those wrestling contacts that you have, Kenny. Go to your friends and be like, so by the way, I'm sure this is something you definitely remember.
Yeah, of course. Why would you not remember this?
And at some point during that match, Lawler says, I'd like to hear Ahmed Johnson say Mother Smucker three times fast. Also something I would like to see. That could be quite brilliant.
So, we have Bret Hart talks about how he wants Shawn Michaels to interfere in the match with Vader tonight, because as we know here in the World Wrestling Federation, commentating on a match as a wrestler is a recipe for disaster.
Yes, always.
Especially when it involves Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels.
Yes, especially always.
So Bret talks about, you know, like he's not worried about Vader. He's gonna beat him and all that sort of stuff. And again, like Bret Hart slowly is just losing it a little bit. You know, in terms of not losing it in terms of his talent, but losing his patience.
He's definitely losing his patience. I mean, and I can't blame him, because they're actually orchestrating this. I feel like Bret Hart has a right to be losing his patience, right? Because he's talking about Shawn Michaels, and if Shawn Michaels wants to stick his self at ringside, Bret Hart stumbled a little bit here, bless him. But, you know, he hopes that he sticks his nose in his business, because that would be, you know, Bret's pleasure. And as far as Vader goes, he's big, but he's stupid. And mark my words, when this thing comes down to the final seconds, Vader's going to make one mistake. Cue Psycho Sid music. So Bret Hart doesn't even get to finish his promo again. He keeps getting interrupted by Psycho Sid.
As always, he's interrupted. I feel like he's interrupted too much, though, you know? Like, they keep doing this to him. It's quite annoying.
Well, it is annoying. I'm annoyed on his behalf.
But up next, we do get our Lord and Savior, Psycho Sid, who comes out. I mean, I assume that you were just overjoyed.
I was. But before he came out, we got an ad.
We did.
We heard his music. We heard Sid's music, but we didn't see Sid, I don't believe, until after George and Adam were obnoxious.
The best thing about this is, like, so here's the... So far in the Jordan Adam saga, we've had them turning up to the Alamo Dome, them sitting in their chairs, one of them going for a piss, telling each other they couldn't get Christmas presents for each other. And now... Someone else has turned up.
There's an interloper.
But here's the problem, right? So I had always thought that George and Adam got their tickets together. Like that maybe George ordered two or Adam ordered two.
Well, here's the whole problem with the George and Adam situation. Why did they show up weeks early to the Royal Rumble in the first place? To get a good seat. Because they were under the impression that it was general admission. Now... This interloper shows up, tells Glasses Guy, hey, you're in my seat, and sits in the middle of them?
But what he did was he it was his ticket. He apparently had that seat. So my issue is, did George and Adam buy separate seats?
Do George and Adam even have tickets? Is my question.
There's a lot to unpack here.
I want maybe this all to end with them not having tickets and getting thrown out before the show starts.
Maybe we should just do a 1 hour George and Adam analysis. You know, we just go through beginning to end, their backstory, and everything leads up to the Royal Rumble. Let us know on Twitter, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to see that.
You know, somebody's going to actually want that. That's not happening.
Couldn't give a fuck if Vince McMahon asks me to do it. I'm not doing it.
But apparently George and Adam are also making signs, or the glasses one is making a sign, and it says Austin 318. And then he's also trying to wave to an empty ring, going, "Steve, look at my sign, Steve," when the Rumble is 2 weeks away. I mean, they are the dumbest humans, right? Like, they're giving Dean Ambrose a run for his money here.
They are, without a shadow of a doubt. But we get Sid, and he's obviously out here to talk about his match with Shawn Michaels at the Royal Rumble. Explain to the lovely people what Sid's got to say this week.
Oh, Sid, I love him so much, so much. So Sid comes out, and Mr. Saunders came into the room and goes, "Oh, Psycho Sid, you and Psycho Sid, what is it with you and Psycho Sid?" And I'm like, he's a champ. He's a shiny, shiny champ, and I love him. But Psycho Sid has to say this week, "See, Jim Ross, you haven't even got a clue, because I'm not intimidated by nothing. No man that walks." And he doesn't even say walks, it's like walks. Like, he pronounces it very strangely. "Now see what we're standing in here, right here. This is what I consider the dying field." So the ring is the dying field now, Kenny. And inside this arena, you have to hit or be hitting. You have to kick or be kicking. I mean, kick or be kicking, hit or be hitting. Oh, this is one of those glorious Sid promos.
The thing is, like, by all accounts, the stuff that Sid says should have him fired. Right? Sure. But by all accounts, like, he's so awful, but at the same time, he delivers it in such a maniacal, crazy way. And here's the thing, right? Sid, for all he is ranty and, like, is mental, he's actually the most sane one in behavior terms between him, Brett, and Sean.
He's absolutely. Well, the thing is, Sid believes everything he says. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, he's absolutely insane, but I believe him.
Shawn Michaels, you know, might complain, but Jose Lothario made himself part of the game.
He did. He absolutely did make himself part of the game.
So, you know, he got what was coming to him.
He did.
Although I still do love the idea of, like, them thinking, do you know what, we'll have Psycho Sid, like, hit Jose with a camera and people will feel sympathetic to Sean. Like, I love the idea they thought that was going to happen.
There's no way to feel sympathetic to Sean. There is absolutely no way to feel sympathetic to Sean. I don't understand how anyone could feel sympathetic to Sean when he is just such a prick, right? Like, Shawn Michaels, who comes out here, you know, after Sid finishes his promo saying that, you know, he was on the day he was born the man. And, you know, even my favorite thing, you know, you can never have that claim. I don't care, even if it's in your hometown. So I'm going to walk into San Antonio with the odds against me. How are the odds against Psycho Sid in San Antonio? I mean, I guess if Jose Lothario is on the apron or something, or on, you know, at ringside, maybe you could say it's a numbers game. But I mean, the odds are not really against Psycho Sid here.
Is he maybe just talking home field advantage?
That could be.
Is that, like,
maybe he's, like, unfamiliar with how everyone loses in their hometown all the time.
Well, yeah, because it's funny, because, like, in, like, you know, football, like, soccer, for you American listeners, the thing about, like, football is, like, home, playing at your home football stadium is an advantage to playing away, you know?
Well, and, yeah, like, I mean, that's the same in any sport, except wrestling.
It's because wrestling's not a sport. Yeah. That's really the answer.
But yeah, you have the hometown crowd behind you and everything. But Shawn Michaels, prick that he is, interrupts the good time that everyone was having with Psycho Sid in his promo. His music comes out. What is Shawn Michaels wearing? Shawn Michaels, who I'm supposed to feel sympathy for because of Jose Lothario and his, you know, connection to Jose Lothario having had a heart attack after being attacked by the vicious, vicious Psycho Sid. Shawn Michaels wearing a fucking trench coat with no shirt. What even is he doing? And then he decides to, like, get up on the announce table and do a strip tease and take off the trench coat so that he can just be shirtless on commentary.
And also, like, he starts to undo his trousers.
Yeah, he does. He absolutely does. My favorite.
And I don't understand. Let's play a hypothetical scenario.
Okay.
Right. Sandra, you are a young lady watching Monday Night Raw in 1997.
Sure.
Okay? And you have a crush on the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels.
Okay, I'm
Let's just say this is the world we live in.
What a are you sad more, world.
Are you more into him by him threatening to take his trousers off at commentary and interrupting, you know, like, and just being Shawn Michaels? Like, is that something that people want to see?
It's very difficult to place myself in any situation where I would ever be a young lady with a crush on the Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels. I mean, not really. No. I mean, no. Especially not if he's just going to be sitting behind a table. What does it matter if your pants are on or off?
This is the analysis you can come to expect from us here at Inside the Ropes. We like to really delve into the trouser action that goes on.
My favorite thing, though, is like Sid is quite amused by Shawn Michaels and actually responds, you know, because he says, see, this is what I'm talking about, and this is why I do the things I do. So right now, I want to apologize for around the world. I want to apologize for what I'm going to do because I'm not going to be responsible. And I'm like, don't be responsible, Sid. Just kick his ass.
But that leads us to Bret Hart and Vader, which, you know, fuck, what a main event.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, this show had a couple really big matches on it.
Yeah, it did. This was the beginning of the era of, like, every week was big matches, you know? We get the clip from Superstars where Undertaker had enough of Jim Cornette and tombstoned him.
Yeah.
Which is Jim Cornette being written off as a manager, which he explained to us, obviously, in the Survivor Series podcast on Patreon, which you can go and listen to. But we get Bret Hart and Vader. I really love Bret Hart and I really love Vader. Also, for old school WWF fans, I really love the fact that Bret was in his all pink gear, which he never wore again after this.
Oh, really?
And he never wore it around this time either. Like, he hadn't worn this for years. But it was cool. I always like when you see somebody in different gear for like one special thing. So I was happy to see that. We get the match. It goes on for a little while. But in the end, like, it feels like with Bret Hart and Vader, the only thing this can end in is chaos, right?
Yeah, there's no way that this is going to have some sort of definitive conclusion.
So if we break it down, Bret is kind of in control, I would say. Like, he's getting there. He's going up to the middle rope to do the elbow, and Sid appears. Because for whatever reason, Sid needs a cameraman.
My favorite trope going in the WWF here in 1996/1997 now is Sid's fascination with cameramen. Because it's been ongoing. It wasn't just him grabbing the cameraman and hitting Jose Lothario with the camera, right? Like, he actually had issue with a cameraman on Raw before that. Or was it at the other pay-per-view or something? But, like, where he backed into the cameraman and, like, was going to threaten him or something. Psycho Sid versus cameraman is a very interesting subplot.
It is a very interesting subplot. I mean, maybe that's what really should have happened at, like, WrestleMania 13, was Sid versus a cameraman.
I would totally buy into it.
But Sid, obviously, steals a cameraman, because apparently you're allowed to kidnap people on Raw. But
if
then again,
learned
you know,
anything from Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
Well, this is the same show where, like, Vince McMahon watched gun crime take place at a home and continued to have it filmed. Although I still think Kevin Kelly deserved a raise for that, but that's just, you know, that'll always be what I think. But during all this kind of stuff going on, Steve Austin comes out.
Where did he even come from?
No idea.
Because he was watching backstage. He was watching the match backstage, looking kind of, you
know,
clearly
angry. The melee with Sid, he that's when he ran out. He made his move.
I was almost wondering at this point, like, are Sid and Steve Austin in some sort of cahoots? Is Sid distracting everyone and taking the cameraman away so that we don't see Steve Austin appear? Because I want to see that meeting backstage.
I would love to see that meeting backstage. But yeah, Austin sort of stuns Bret on the outside. And then Vader hits a Vader bomb. And I'm curious for you, as someone who's not been watching too long, Were you pretty shocked that Bret Hart was pinned here by Vader on Raw? Because at this point, Bret Hart has not been defeated in any way since his return. Well, I mean, he was defeated by Sid on pay-per-view. But what I mean is, like, on TV, he's not been defeated, and he's very protected as a wrestler. And he's defeated here by Vader. Was it a shock to you that he got defeated, or were you just kind of expecting it?
Never crossed my mind until right now, until you asked me, actually. I think maybe I'm a little too used to 2016.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, that now that you mention it, it is really interesting that Bret Hart got pinned here. Although maybe it also because I did see him lose on pay-per-view. So it doesn't seem like Bret Hart is somebody who just always wins all the time. And up against an opponent like Vader, it doesn't seem like it's going to hurt Bret to lose to Vader at this point.
Well, I think it actually helps both guys. You've got Bret has now got another reason to be angry about, you know, being screwed again. And then Vader's got a big victory to take him into Rumble season.
Yeah. So, well, and I mean, consider too, Vader's interesting one because I still don't feel like I've seen a lot of Vader necessarily because he was off TV for a little while. He got injured or whatever. So I kind of am still trying to figure out how big Vader is in the scene right now and what they're going to be doing with him because since he hasn't been around, I kind of forgot about him for a little while, but he's still very main event. And when we first started Retro Raw back in September, Vader pinned Shawn Michaels twice. And Shawn Michaels was the champion at that point. And Vader's never really gotten his shot because he lost to Psycho Sid and lost the number one contendership. And now Sid is the champion. So it's kind of interesting because Vader still kind of has a claim that he deserves to be in the main event. So I guess that's why I didn't see it that shocking, because both of these guys definitely deserve to be in the main event. And Bret Hart is much smaller than Vader, and Vader is much bigger and more dominant than Bret Hart. So it just seemed to make sense that way, I guess.
Yeah, that's a good point. But it's interesting taking us into the Royal Rumble with this kind of shocking result, because Bret Hart never really, I mean, I don't know, I'd have to go back and check, but Bret Hart was, I can't remember the last time Bret Hart was pinned on television by anyone, so it was pretty interesting. But then we cut backstage.
It might also be different because I don't distinguish pay-per-view versus television very well.
Yeah, because you're watching it all as a sort of retro project.
It's all a retro project and it's all on the network, so I'm watching it the same way, right? Like, I don't have to carve out time for a pay-per-view and be like, oh, this is really big because it's a pay-per-view. Like, the pay-per-views have felt bigger than Raw, but it doesn't change my watching of them drastically. So that might be part of it too, because I don't distinguish weekly television versus pay-per-view being that separate.
Yeah, that makes sense. But we do cut backstage to Psycho Sid has Pete Lothario by the throat, and he just sort of slaps the piss out of him and power bombs him onto a table. Shawn Michaels runs back from the commentary booth to the whatever they are, the locker room, to try and help out. And then Shawn Michaels has to do his sort of best impression of being a concerned person.
It doesn't go very well for Shawn Michaels.
So he does pretty well for a little while. Like, he's acting as if like he really cares and whatever. Until he then just leaves Pete Lothario alone.
I mean,
or not alone, but with Savio Vega and Aldo Montoya. But like, if he really cared, like, shouldn't you stay by his side?
You'd think. Like, I mean, this is supposed to be someone who's like family to him, right? Because Jose Lothario is supposed to be like a father figure to him and his mentor and all of that. And I mean, I feel like Psycho Sid showed more emotion about having to powerbomb Pete Lothario than Shawn Michaels showed about the fact that Pete Lothario had been powerbombed. Because I mean, Sid says he doesn't want to do this. It's going to hurt me to do this, but I have to. And then powerbombs him. And I was like, yes, wish fulfillment.
There's nothing better than seeing Pete Lothario powerbombed by Sid
backstage after a cameraman has been kidnapped to document it.
Of course. But what made me kind of interested was it seemed like Pete had like a pager in the back of his jeans.
Oh, I didn't notice.
Why does Pete Lothario have a pager? Who's paging Pete Lothario?
It's the 90s, man. Maybe this Pete Lothario is a very important man. Maybe he has very important business dealings to attend to.
Perhaps.
Maybe he's giving the drugs to Shawn Michaels.
I'm going to put my thumbs in the middle for this episode. Because I really did enjoy the main event, and I really enjoyed Sid's promo, but I just felt like the opening match was a bit too non-story, too heely, jarring kind of thing for me, and the tag match was just kind of there. So I'm going to put it in the middle, also because Shawn Michaels' performance as a concerned citizen was terrible.
Shawn Michaels is such a prick. Like, he is the worst. I'm so tired of him on commentary. And also, why does he call Vince McMahon Vin Man? He says it like 3 times in this episode.
Because he's cool.
He's not cool. He is the worst. It's to the point where Shawn Michaels' music hits and I go, ugh.
Okay, here's a question. Who would you rather watch? 1996, 1997 Shawn Michaels or 2016 Undertaker?
Ugh.
What's the less of the two evils?
It's really, really tough to say. Like, really tough to say. And I'll have more words about The Undertaker on the SmackDown summary this week. Not that he's going to be on SmackDown, but...
Wait, I mean, I feel like we can... I mean, we're going to have to talk about this, because I don't really understand what's happening right now. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like... Yeah, I don't really know what's happening. And I'm not saying it's bad, because I don't know. I just don't know what's happening.
It's baffling. And it's hilarious.
Like, I feel like I want it to be explained. Like, he's coming to Raw. Why? Like, I mean, I know why. Like, I know that he's... Well, I mean, I don't know, but I'm presuming he's going to enter himself into the Royal Rumble. But, like...
But why wouldn't he do that on SmackDown?
That's what I mean! Although, maybe it's one of these things where, like, where they're, like, teasing, you know, if The Undertaker wins the Royal Rumble, like... He can challenge for any championship he wants. But, like, here is that the rule again, like it was before? Like, is it just, like, if you win the Royal Rumble, you can choose to challenge whatever you want?
I don't know. They haven't made that clear. I mean, that's interesting. That's an interesting concept. But what just makes me laugh about the whole thing, and I did mean to talk about this on the SmackDown summary, not the Retro Raw Rundown, but the conversation has led here. I'm to the point with The Undertaker where I just laugh now. Like, it's just funny to me how shit he is. Because he comes back on SmackDown, SmackDown 900, big episode, right? Challenges all the SmackDown guys, like, if you don't win this match, then I'm going to be super upset. And they win. So apparently then he was like, oh good, I can fuck off again. But I mean, what was with the whole, I'm back, WrestleMania no longer defines me? I mean, coming back to enter yourself in the Royal Rumble doesn't really do all that much to prove to me that the WrestleMania no longer defines you, because the entire point of the Royal Rumble is to build to WrestleMania. And you haven't been seen since that SmackDown episode where you're like, WrestleMania no longer defines me. So, okay, Undertaker, great, sure. Just, what even? What even? And, like, talking about SmackDown's his show, and he cares so much about SmackDown, now he's just coming back to Raw. It's to the point I can't be upset about it, because it's just so shit, and so funny. And so, they just don't care.
Yeah, it's so sad, because, like, yeah, I'm trying to not, like, shit on it before it happens. Like, maybe there's a reason that, but you know what? Like, it doesn't, maybe I'm being a conspiracy theorist here, but it seems to me that it's fairly obvious to people that they're going to try and do Undertaker Cena at WrestleMania.
Well, that's the match that makes the most sense.
Right. But I actually, part of the reason I want that match is because that means that the main event of WrestleMania will be a SmackDown match.
Mm-hmm.
And SmackDown just beat Raw in the ratings. Is it too far a stretch for them to be, like, annoyed that SmackDown is beating Raw, you know, their favourite child in the ratings? So maybe, like, we'll have an Undertaker appearance on Raw because that'll build up Raw. But then what you're doing is you're sacrificing the fact that you've made all this effort to make SmackDown so good. So take away from one of the fucking SmackDown stories!
It's baffling. It's absolutely baffling. It doesn't make any sense. I'm just really scared that The Undertaker is going to be fighting for the title.
I love that that's your fear. I mean, I laugh because it's a very realistic fear.
It's a realistic fear, and it's, ugh, I don't know. I don't want to talk about The Undertaker anymore.
However, where's your thumb for this episode of Raw? Thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle?
I mean, middling to up. There was some fun stuff on it. It seemed like such an ad for Shotgun Saturday Night, to be honest, because a lot of the interstitial stuff was just recap of Shotgun Saturday Night, which is probably why this episode of the Retro Raw Rundown is a bit shorter, because we just talked about Shotgun Saturday Night and didn't really need to rehash it. But it was fine, and I got to see Pete Lothario powerbombed into a table that didn't break. It looked like maybe it was supposed to break, I'm not sure, but that was fun. So it was another one of those episodes where nothing too monumental happened. Shawn Michaels' presence just brings it down because he's awful. And that's another thing that's kind of interesting, actually, about this whole main event melee situation that they keep having going on. Is I like that they're still teasing Steve Austin versus Bret Hart, and I'm probably watching it differently knowing that they fight at WrestleMania, obviously. Mm-hmm. And they seem to want to be building Bret versus Shawn. And I don't remember everything that went on in the middle of how we get from one place to another, but it's intriguing that they're building both stories. But what's most intriguing to me is that we're definitely teasing a Bret Hart heel turn here, with him getting impatient and fed up. And Shawn Michaels keeps talking about Bret Hart, you know, he's never happy with anything. He always has his bug, or he always has a bug in his butt about something. Yeah, you're one to talk, Shawn Michaels. And it's just interesting because they seem to actually think that Shawn Michaels is the babyface and Bret Hart's going to be the heel. Like,
again, I try not to say much because I don't want to give anything away. But yeah, I would love to have seen how it played out to see how they were able to try and get what they wanted to happen.
I mean, it's not a spoiler because to say that I know that Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart do not fight at WrestleMania.
Yes, you know this.
The
fact,
WrestleMania 13 match is one of the most iconic matches in Stone Cold Steve Austin's career. It's not like I don't know what happens.
Exactly. But it's a very interesting route on getting there, for sure.
It definitely is. I'm also very proud of myself for having recognized Savio Vega, Bart Gunn, and Aldo Montoya.
You're practically a mid-90s wrestling fan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is it for the Retro Raw Rundown. We will be back next week for the go-home edition of Raw before the Royal Rumble. Before you know it, we'll be talking about the Alamo Dome event from 1997.
Just a couple weeks away now.
Yeah. Sandra and I are also going to be covering the Royal Rumble 2000 at some point, as requested. So we'll be doing that. That was by Christopher Martin. So we will be doing that soon. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes for all the content. And you can see on there what you can get for the various dollar amounts that I covered at the top of the show. Sandra, where can people find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. And follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes.
Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.
Bye. It's time! It's time!